And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 213. Episode number 213. Today is a 7 questions edition. I had the pleasure of interviewing the writer, director of a new film, Sweetheart. His name is Tom Danger. Danger is his last name, not his middle name. So that's how the saying goes. This was a great, fun interview via Zoom. He's in Australia, so he got up early just to interview with me, which is great. Sweetheart is a really it's a funny movie. Let me read the description to you. In this hilarious and heartfelt look at love and heartbreak as a young adult, Sweetheart follows Jacob, who embarks on a road trip to a small beachside town with his two best friends, Mike and Drew, as well as his sociopath sister, Abby, for what promises to be a fun weekend of going through their newly deceased grandfather's stuff. But upon arrival, Jacob's true motivations are revealed. His ex-girlfriend, Olivia, who lives in the town, and Jacob wants one last shot at probably disappointing her again. Meanwhile, Sky has just had her heart broken, and the only one who can pick up the pieces is her best friend, Carly. Together, they go on a voyage through the night as Sky struggles with her burgeoning sexuality, having to deal with perverts, pirates, and worst of all, her parents. There is also a baby goat, of course. And I'd say it in the interview, and it's true. The goat's what got me. I see a lot of indie films come through my way, and I don't watch them because there's so many. There's like 1800 films a year that come out, right? But this one had a goat in the trailer, and I was like, I'm going to watch this. I'm going to watch this movie. And so I did. And then I was like, I want to interview the director or talent from the show. And so I got the director. Yeah. So I wrote it, directed it. So we talked a little bit about the movie in the beginning of this, and then we move on to the 7 questions. Okay. So that's what we do. There you go. That's it. Hey, big shout out to our Patreon supporters. If you want to become a supporter of the show for just as little as $1 a month, you can go to patreon.com/blackandahalf. And for as little as $1 a month, or you can upgrade like our inner circle members, like Tara Widener, Stefan Ward, Keith Nagel, be one of them, step it up. Or you can just become a member of the League of Extraordinary Listeners for just $1. You can do that. You can also check out my other podcast, movie. If you're looking for movie reviews strictly, I mean, you can go to blackandahalf.com website, or you can go to the new show, You're Watching a Movie.com. You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein. Go there and read reviews. Also, I'm putting up video and podcasts over there. That's another podcast. You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein. Look that up where you're listening to this. You can also check out my other podcast. There's 3 going on now. If you want to learn all about the process of buying a home, or you know somebody who does, share my other podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. Do you see how that brands together with synergy? And people watch movies in their home, and they listen to the movies because they listened to Black and a Half and heard about it there. That's how it all works. Sweetheart is available now on digital, all platforms. You can download it there, buy it, download it, rent it, whatnot. So please do that. In the meantime, I want you to put your hands together. I don't know why I said that, like, but you're just gonna clap because put your hands together. But I want you to open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 213, 7 questions with Tom Danger. Can I tell you, Tom,
Yeah.
That you had me at the goat. The second I get a lot of indie films coming through, you know, and asking like, hey, you want to watch interviews? And I start reading this, and I said, it said a goat. And I said, well, I'm just, okay, I need an interview. I need the link. I got, last year, I did my first acting scene with a goat on camera. So I now have an endearment toward goats, and I want to, like, judge that. And you had a very fine goat actor, let me say.
I'll tell you what, man, Ralphie the goat was probably better than most of the real actors I had on set. He was so well behaved, did everything we needed him to do. I should have just cast the movie full of goats.
How was he with
goat craft, story
with craft services? Was he did he just
honestly like him? he didn't even like eat our food. He just kind of did his own thing. It's exactly what you want out of an actor.
It's a money
he brought
saver.
His own lunch. Yeah.
My gosh. Yeah, a very and a very enjoyable film there. I just the opening scene, I shouldn't be so judgy, but the first, you know, the first 30 seconds, minute are very important to capture.
Sure. No, you're right.
And
nice.
I was like, this is my humor. I like this. I'm like, okay, let's go. I like this. Is this, now I didn't get to read the background of this particular story, and you were a writer, the writer and director, or co-writer?
Yes, that is correct.
Co-writer, is that?
Yes, so okay. I co-wrote it with my my often called hetero life mate, Logan Webster. He and I are best buddies. We go way back.
Okay.
And we decided a year or two before we started filming that we wanted to write a film together, because I'd made a film before, he'd made a film before. Uh-huh. My movie was much better, so he obviously needed a bit of help.
Yeah. Okay.
So we decided to collaborate and make a comedy because we're so fantastically funny.
Yeah.
And Sweetheart was the result. I've always been somewhat of an egomaniac, so when it came to who was going to direct, it was of course going to be me. But he took the consolation prize of being one of the supporting characters.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Okay. Yeah. And what was this inspired by true events, or
so it's not so much inspired by true events, but more it's more inspired by true emotions. Yeah, no, like the narrative itself has no real basis in reality, but I think we've all gone through you know, a messy breakup or two, or a breakup where we thought like maybe in the moment we weren't sure if it was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. While you're in the relationship, you don't know if it's the right thing, and when the relationship is over, you're not sure if ending it was the right thing to do. And I think that taps into somewhat of a very universal experience that I think most people will go through at least at one point in their lives. And when people go through it, they're probably going to be a young adult. So it kind of made sense to put those two things together to make a young adult comedy all about heartbreak and being so uncertain. And I think that I hadn't really seen a lot of young adult comedies that really dealt with, I guess you should call it, existential dread. And, you know, just all the feelings that come along, with the relationship, both the good and the bad.
Right.
Because one of the things that I really like about Sweetheart is the fact that it follows Jacob, our main character, and his doomed efforts to kind of reignite the spark that was once there,
right?
And we never really see what it was like when he was with Olivia. It's just kind of this vague, yeah, abstract notion in his head that it was better when he was with her,
right?
But you know, it's not really necessary that we see that. All we see is the fact that he's really cut up about it, and he will throw any friend he has under the bus to try and regain what he once had.
Yeah. Now I'm curious, when you write a film like this, are you taking like any snippets? Like, I know the story's not true, but is there like you know what? I remember this little dialogue I had with somebody, and do you insert parts of, like, would you say in different films you do that you are slowly telling little stories from your life? Or
that I do think that's certainly true to an extent. If you're a writer, I think you're always in kind of note-taking mode, even if you don't have a pen, even if you don't have a notepad. Whenever you have interactions with people in the real world, whenever I leave my dungeon and I venture out into where the sun shines, I do kind of make an effort to, if someone says something, or if I have a conversation, or if I see something that I think is really funny or unique or interesting, I do kind of make a mental note, and I will write it down. If I do have my phone on me, or if I do have a pen and paper. And there are some instances in the film of little nuggets of actual conversations I know that I've had. And I know there are parts of Logan's life that have like bled into there as well.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that comes to mind just in general is with Sky and Carly, there's a scene when they're just kind of getting, they're talking, they're getting ready to go out. And Sky's kind of questioning Carly's, I guess you'll call it like sexuality, like how she's certain about who she is and what she is. And Carly just kind of mentions that she thinks she's about 68% gay.
Yeah.
That is something I heard from a friend of mine when we were having a conversation just like that. And so I like to think that the film is quite sincere, even though the humor is very, it can be quite absurd and the things that happen are really weird. I do think there's, you know, nuggets of sincerity sprinkled throughout the film that kind of grounded in what people actually do and what they do say.
Yeah. How do you feel, particularly in this day and age, writing, when you're writing scenes between women, what do you have other women read it to see if it sounds or like, how do you write for women?
Hilariously, I just think of that scene in Seinfeld where George and Jerry are trying to write a sitcom and they both realize they don't know how to write for women.
Yeah.
But Logan and I never really ran into that issue because we've both been writing for like quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I've never, again, because I am such an egomaniac, I've never thought I've had much of a problem doing that.
Okay.
But that being said, when we did specifically Sky and Carly, they are kind of the heart of the film. Like there's, you know, Jacob's story, which is half the movie, and then the Sky and Carly who's half the story. So we were writing for these two female characters for like a, you know, quite a significant portion of the movie. And what Logan and I often say to each other is that Sky, while we were writing it, Sky and Carly are kind of like female alter egos of ourselves.
Okay.
Not in the sense of like how their relationship kind of how they relate to each other, but in the sense that like when you write any character, really, it doesn't matter if it's a male or a female. I think it's less important to focus on like, oh my God, is this like a genuine female or a genuine male? It's more like, is this a genuine person? Because people come in all shapes and sizes. And if you write something that's like hyper fixated on a particular aspect of that person's personality, sometimes that comes across as insincere and disingenuous. Mm-hmm. There have been some instances where I've been watching like a movie or a TV show and characters come across somewhat one-sided. And that can happen when they focus too much on like, oh, they're clearly trying to write this character to fulfill a particular thing. Like they're really trying to make this like a very female character. They're really pointing out that they're female. Even the opposite direction, they're really pointing out that they're male and they have to act this a certain way. Man, people are way more complicated than that. But I did do what you just said. I did like show the script to like many female friends just to kind of get their input. And we did change a couple of things based on what they said, just to, again, make it a little more sincere, because I really didn't want people to watch the film and come away from it thinking like, oh, it's so obvious that a man wrote it. I mean, of course, some people are going to come away from it feeling that anyway.
Yeah.
But I've had a lot of people tell me, you know, maybe they were just patronizing me, but I have had a lot of girls tell me that they did identify particularly with Sky and Carly and found their interactions to be, you know, genuine and sweet. And that's really all I can hope for.
I understand. When I was in college, I directed a play that was very female centric, and I had one of our, I mean, God, I'm so old that at the time it was like one of the more feminist professors was like questioning me like, are you really going to get the relationship between two women? And I think about that now and I'm like, that conversation wouldn't even happen now because we'd be arguing about gender and like how or what? Were we going to put someone in a box? Because I'd get told women don't act like that. And I'm like, well, some women act like that too. We all act like
I mean, a lot of people act like a lot of things.
I have often been accused of being I grew up being told emotionally that you're acting like a woman. So I'm like,
yeah, I get that. I've gotten that a lot. Yeah. I've often been told I don't necessarily emulate a lot of masculine traits. Yeah. Bro, I'm surrounded by like Pokemon toy. I'm wearing a Pokemon shirt right now. Like, clearly I don't act like a grown up a lot of the time, let alone a man.
Right.
I'm a boy at the very most.
I look forward. I don't know if we're almost there, but now that we're breaking down that women don't have to like certain things or be like certain ways, that we stop defining what an adult should do. Like, you know,
that is true.
Like, yeah, like, no, you're not an adult until you've completely given up your dreams and fantasy and just are just walking that plank to death. Like, that's you're an adult. And you can't do that.
You're an adult until you genuinely just hate your life and everything about it.
I don't have time. I get how many parent friends tell me they don't have time to do things that bring them pleasure in life. They're like, oh, I can't do that. Oh, I don't have time. No, I gotta go to my accounting job.
I am now at the age where I have friends from high school who have, you know, they've started having kids, which is like, you know, fantastic for them. I'm not ready for that quite yet. But I see that, and I do really enjoy seeing when they do take the time to do their own thing and kind of I see the person that they always were as opposed to the person they became after they became a parent. I like it when people retain, you know, who they are and what they enjoy, and they don't just kind of give up everything they once loved just because they feel like they have to.
I've always told people, because I've tended to live my life, I don't know, a little play, I've always never given up things that I love doing despite being a parent and married and thing. I've told people, look, everyone watches those movies, and no one's ever the sad in a movie that they didn't spend more time in their business. The movies are always about, oh, I should have enjoying myself and be with my family. And I've been living my life at the end of the movie the whole time. So, so I don't know if you got a preview of what I do here. Everyone that comes on, we ask the Black and a Half world famous 7 questions, being retitled Silas Lindenstein's world famous 7 questions.
Very good.
So I ask people those each episode. So in the first time you're on, so if you're ready,
born ready.
Okay.
I think.
Number one, what are you most nerdy about?
Nerdy about? Oh man, that's not even a fucking question. Pokemon. Okay. By far Pokemon. I mean, look, there's a lot of things that I love that I really get into, and maybe I know a bit too much about particular subjects. But
yeah.
Pokemon, it really goes above and beyond, man. Like, every time I feel like I'm in a perpetual state of excitement, because the Game Freak just kind of keeps a steady flow of Pokemon games coming throughout the years. It's guaranteed that when those games drop, like, I'm taking the day off. I don't pre-order any games except Pokemon. A lot of people will tell me, Tom, why do you do that? That's why the games are unfinished when they come out, because they know people are just going to buy it. And I'm like, yeah, I know. Yeah. And I'm still going to do it. I've loved it since I was a kid. And maybe there was a point where I really thought I would grow out of it, and I simply just did not. I don't know why. What are you gonna do?
Do you like the trading card game, video game? Is there any aspect you're not into?
I mean, look, when I was a kid, I loved the card game. I should say, I loved the cards. I never really learned how to play the game. I just liked the pictures of the cards. Well, and I think a lot of people had that experience as well.
Yeah.
The games, I've played them endlessly. They're kind of my safe, comfortable, happy place. And even just last night, I was about to hang out with my friends. We're going to play virtual mini golf, but I was waiting for my quest to charge, and so I jump on my Switch for a bit. I start shiny hunting a bit. I found 3 shiny Sneasel, bro. It's so fun. Like, I'm trying to make a whole shiny team. I'm gonna have a shiny Decidueye, Weavile. I'm gonna have a Camerupt. I'm gonna have a Lycanroc.
Are you doing Pokemon Go? Do you do Pokemon Go?
I never got into Pokemon Go because my phone at the time was like broken and I didn't feel like getting another one. So that wave kind of passed me by, but I did love the fact that for a brief shining moment, the world seemed to unite under a common love of Pokemon because I've been under that umbrella for like my whole life.
I will say, you know, when it first came out, I didn't have money to spend on extra things and it came out and I was like, I don't know what to do on here. Okay, I'm out of balls. I don't know what do I do? And I kind of stopped after like a month. And a year, like 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, found out my neighbor was obsessed with Pokemon Go. And so I opened it back up and I started playing again. And now it's a daily activity for me. Just like anything else, I play Pokemon Go. I try to stay up on the quests. I'm catching, always looking. My kids, teaching them how to throw the balls on the. There's still an active community of this Pokemon Go.
It was so big when it came out. Like there was no way it was ever. I mean, look, of course, it was going to drop off in popularity from those like initial massive numbers, but it retained like a very strong core player base.
Seattle Center, full of Pokemon Go events. I go there and it's full. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Hilariously, this is I was in Japan this year. And I went to Mount Koyasan, which is like near Kyoto, it's near Osaka. And there's a very important Buddhist temple there. It's like a UNESCO heritage site. And we're doing my dad and my brother and I were doing this tour through this cemetery at night. And it's like a massive sprawling cemetery filled with like samurai and Buddhist monks and stuff like that. And there's a main temple that's kind of off limits, and they actually had to put up a sign that said no Pokemon Go players because people were trying like to get in and around the temple. They actually had to write to Nintendo and request that they take out the Pokemon they had placed there because they tend to place Pokemon in like areas of interest so people walk around. But these monks were like, for the love of God, Nintendo, take the Pokemon away. There's too many people here trying to catch Pokemon.
Yeah, they have removed them here from in the US from schools. They have a border around schools that don't let them come in.
It makes sense.
However, they have not stopped them from the cemeteries. Okay. When the cemeteries that have ghosts spawning in them.
That's pretty funny. I like that.
I don't know. It's a little creepy. I don't know if I want that one. Okay. Number two, what's something that you love to eat?
Well, as I like to tell anyone who listens to me for more than a couple of minutes, I'm actually a vegan, Silas.
Oh, really? Oh.
And I could, you know, I talk about
You made it 19 minutes without telling.
I know, man. Like my vein was sure like popping.
Are you sure you're vegan?
I couldn't last much longer, man. I was just like, I know the food question's coming. I just have to wait it out before I can say it. No, I've actually been I've been a vegetarian for. When I became a vegetarian when I was 8, much to the annoyance of my parents.
I imagine.
Like, what are you doing, man? Why are you doing this? Yeah. And I'm just like, I'm just so much morally superior than you. As a young kid, I just kind of had this moment where I was just like, hey, man, I wouldn't like it if a cow came into my house and ate me.
Yeah.
So why would I eat a cow?
Yeah.
I mean, look, that's a kind of a kid reason to be a vegetarian. Yeah. But it does hold. It holds up.
Yeah.
Once you extrapolate what that really means.
Yeah.
And then a year or two ago, I went vegan and I kind of wish I had done it sooner. I always just kind of figured that I didn't want to do it because like, oh man, I like milk too much. Oh man, I love eggs too much.
Yeah.
But then I learned about, there was this incident in the UK. There was the soccer player who there was this video emerged of him at a birthday party or like a party in his house or something. This video emerged of him kicking this house cat, and of course like the outcry was like massive, like, oh, this guy is kicking a cat, he's an animal hater, all these people are telling him he should go to hell for kicking this cat. Next time he walks out on the soccer pitch, everyone's like boo, boo. And at the same time, the crowd is like munching down on hot dogs.
Yeah.
And I just kind of had this moment where I really kind of examined what I thought was right and what I thought was moral. And I was just like, I really can't justify continuing to drink milk, continuing to, you know, eat eggs Because once I went to that story, I kind of fell down this rabbit hole of like how animals are treated. And I always just kind of had this blind spot about the dairy industry. I just kind of folded my arms and was just like, hey, man, I mean, the animals aren't getting killed. Like, what's the problem? But that's a really shallow and naive way to think about it. And I kind of wish I had this realization earlier that, hey, man, the dairy industry is just as bad because they, you know, exploit these animals for a long time until they have no use, and then they're killed. So it's really no different. Once I had that realization, you know, when you're continuing to support that industry, you're essentially paying someone to torture and kill animals on your behalf because you're the driving force of the marketplace. So I just decided to give it up, and it was way easier than I thought it would be, because like there's a vegan substitute for pretty much any food that you want. So in answer to your question, I eat anything I want, and my favorite thing is probably this burger that I've been having for like 20 years. It's like this Australian brand, the vegan burger, which is just it's like crumbed. Oh man, it's so good. When I was a kid and I had this burger, I was just like, hey, I'll just eat this forever. This is awesome. But now I also have some regular meals in rotation that I'm having like all the time. I have this vegan mac and cheese that I make out of pumpkin and cashew nuts. Makes this really nice, like cheesy kind of sauce. Man, it's so good. It's so good.
Do you eat Vegemite?
No, I hate Vegemite, and oh. I hate the fact that it's like an Australian staple. I said before, like there's some things where I'm just like, I don't feel like I'm very masculine. I don't think I'm very Australian in a lot of ways, because like most Australians love meat, they love beer, they love Vegemite, they love sport. I hate all of those things. And like I've never really identified with a lot of the things that Australians consider quite like quintessential to our identity and culture. So I've always just kind of felt like I didn't quite fit into that Australian mold that a lot of people like to think about.
No colonialism. Like what?
Hey man, call me out Australian, but I just don't like displacing native people. What do you want from me?
Okay. All right. What's something that you love to drink?
I mean, look, every morning I start myself off with a coffee. But I should say that until about a year or two ago, I drank apple juice like a fiend, man. I was into apple juice so hard since I was a kid. And then one day I was just like, I feel like I'm drinking too much apple. I really feel like this is, like my dad keeps
an
telling me.
Excessive number of apples.
I know. I'm like, what are you talking about, dad? It's like juice. It's healthy. He's like, yeah, but like there's a lot of sugar in there as well. And I was like, dah, you're crazy. And then I was like, I wonder if I could kind of just ease off on the apple juice. And now I drink primarily water. If a drop of apple juice touches my lip, it'll be that part in The Simpsons where Barney has alcohol for the first time after a while. He's like, it begins.
All right. Number four, what kind of music do you love?
Oh man, what a loaded question. All right, so when I was growing up, I was really into like 70s and 80s classic rock. Give me your Alice Cooper, give me a David Bowie, give me a Kiss, Led Zeppelin.
Hold on, did you call it classic rock when you were growing up?
Look, when I was like, this is when I was like 10, 11 is when I started developing like my own taste.
You thought of it as classic rock at that point?
I mean, look, because it was the music.
Is that how old I am that when you were a kid, it was classic?
Hey, man, it was the music my dad listened to that by default made it classic rock. Okay. And, you know, 30 years before, like 20 years before you're born, I think like that's kind of the basis you can call it like classic. And I was born in 92, so I'm listening to the stuff from the 70s. That's classic to me.
Okay.
All right. But I reserve the right to act as you just did when like my kids or kids like in 10, 20 years from now refer to music from the 90s and as classic rock. I'll be like, shut up, you don't know what you're talking about. So yeah, that was my jam, as well as you know, the stuff that was popular when I was growing up, stuff like Blink-182 and Third Eye Blind. That kind of music, that late 90s, early 2000s stuff, really bled into Sweet Hurt. That's like one of the movies, like core principles. I wanted to have that soundtrack that made you feel like you were in the late 90s, early 2000s, because a lot of the movies from that era that I really loved growing up, you know, things like American Pie and Chasing Amy and like Empire Records, all of them had this like awesome goddamn soundtrack.
Oh, really, soundtracks used to be the jam. Before,
yeah, and I really wanted that. Yeah. I really wanted that for Sweetheart. And I think I've done that. Like my musical varies my musical tastes are quite varied. But in my heart of hearts, I'm that 70s rocker, and okay. I always shall be.
I used to only buy like soundtrack albums because that was the only time I could get a mix. Like,
yeah, no,
like you got a mix of songs, so it was always different listening to it. Now, you know, without the radio, I love that. Number five, what do you love to create?
Oh, geez. I mean, look, obviously, movies is probably the easy answer. I wouldn't say I love every step of the process because it's so long and it's so arduous, and sometimes it's quite thankless. You know, a lot of the time you put so much time, effort, and love into a thing, and then sometimes it feels like no one really cares.
Yeah.
I didn't get any sort of support or funding from any sort of studio or from Screen Australia, any sort of organization that kind of helps, you know, make films or independent films or anything. Yeah. I didn't get any help from anyone, man. And it wasn't for lack of trying, man. Like, I reached out in pre-production, during production, and then post-production, trying to find any sort of support, financial or otherwise, and I just got nothing. So a lot of the time it felt like I was kind of, swimming against the current. That being said, now that it is finished and I am getting distribution in the United States and Canada, I do feel like justified and validated in like fighting for it for so long and making sure that it actually happens.
Yeah,
would have been easy to give up at particular points, but I put too much of my own money and I'm way too stubborn and egotistical to like say that I was wrong. So I just had to finish it. Aside from movies, right now I'm writing a book that I've been writing for a couple of years now. It's been hard finishing it, like whilst simultaneously working full time and also finishing Sweetheart, which in and of itself is somewhat of a full time job.
Mm-hmm.
But any kind of spare moment I get, if I'm not shiny hunting Pokemon, I'll be working on my book and trying to get that done. And I finished the first draft 2 years ago, and since then I've been like doing the second draft, and I'll probably finish the first draft in a couple of weeks. Like, I'm very close to the end. I just keep having to go back and like re-edit certain segments and make sure things are like coherent and cohesive. Mm-hmm. And once I finish that, man, maybe one more pass. I hope it doesn't take that long again. I want to try and get published, man. I'd love to walk into a bookstore one day and see my own book there. Because mm-hmm. If you see a book that's written by Tom Danger, I feel like a lot of people are going to be like, that's an intriguing author name.
Better be a spy novel.
Yeah, what? Well, no, it's how do I make it as vague as possible while also giving you a good, like, it's a action thriller historical fantasy novel. Yeah, I'll go with that.
I mean, would you say it is story that you loved creating? Is that why it's
absolutely. Look, this I'm not sure how relevant this is, but when I was younger, one of my favorite books was actually it was Michael Jackson's autobiography. It was called Moonwalk. He probably didn't write, he probably had a ghostwriter or something, but literally the first page he said, like, one of the first lines I think is like, I always wanted to be a storyteller. And he kind of uses that as a jumping off point of using like song and dance to kind of tell stories. And that always stuck with me, just someone wanting, rather than like nailing yourself down to a particular occupation or, you know, thing you do, just under the umbrella of storyteller, I felt like that really spoke to me. You could definitely say that. I just really like telling stories.
All right, number six, what's a game you love to play?
I already answered that.
I'll
pivot slightly. Aside from Pokemon, I do have a long and storied history with video games. When I was growing up, I loved playing Halo with my brother and my buddies. You know, Blood Gulch on the original Halo game, man, that level is multiplayer. You get some warthogs, you crash into each other. Hey, man, that's a good time right there. That's great. I will say, like, in terms of like modern gaming, I'm always like one generation behind. I never really buy stuff new. I usually wait until the console is a couple of years old or until a game is a couple of years old before I get it, because I hate how games work right now, where you buy it and then like a year later, it's like the game releases again, but it's the complete edition with all the DLC that we didn't give you the first time because we wanted to extract more money from you.
Right.
And you might be saying, Tom, doesn't Pokemon do that? And I'm like, yes. Well, and it's my only blind spot, man. Give me a break. I got to play that day one. In terms of like modern gaming, I'm usually like a couple of years behind. But I had some really positive experiences recently with like Ghost of Tsushima. I really love that game because I'm like well into Japanese history and samurai. When I was in my teens, I really loved Red Dead Redemption, like the first one. I honestly think Red Dead Redemption is probably my favorite kind of modern game, like post 2000s. Mm-hmm. I think the writing in that game is just phenomenal, and like it's not just it's a game. It's one of the best stories I feel I've experienced in any medium.
What system do you have?
Red Dead Redemption.
But what system?
I played it on Xbox 360. Back in the day, and I've played that game multiple times, and each time I'm like, okay, this time when I play it, I'm gonna be like a bad guy. I'm gonna be an outlaw. I'm gonna take no crap. I'm gonna shoot people on sight. And then I get into the game. I'm just like, oh man, I just can't make him do it.
That's funny. The first time I really got excited about writing of a game was actually just a few years ago. It's a PS4 PlayStation exclusive, was Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh, I love Horizon.
Oh,
man. Like
that
when I bought this PS4, when I moved into this place with my girlfriend, we needed like a Blu-ray player for a TV and everything. I was like, oh, I'll get a PlayStation 4 and then I can play all the games I haven't played. So I picked up like Horizon.
Yeah.
I picked up Red Dead 2. I picked up Spider-Man. I picked up Arkham Knight. Yeah. Like all these games that I'd kind of been waiting to play. And Horizon was one of those ones where like I didn't have a history with the franchise or anything like that because it was a
first
new game.
One,
and I was like robot dinosaurs. Like that speaks to like the Power Rangers fan in me. I'll pick that up. Man, that game was awesome. I loved it so much.
I tell people about that I was playing it for a while going, oh, this is kind of cool. This is cool. And I was like, oh, yeah. And I hit a point in it that I thought like, oh, I'm coming to the end of the game. Okay. And it was like this. Like
game's barely started, man.
Like, what?
It's barely started.
What is going on?
The map was so much larger than I thought. Yeah, no, because like I'm still very much stuck in like the 2000s era of gaming. So whenever I play like a modern game, I do kind of surprise myself with how big they are in scope and how much you can do. And Horizon was definitely one of those games. And a lot of the time I don't really get into games that have like, you know, really in-depth like crafting systems and like armor where you get to up like your defense by one point by using this one herb on this one moving. But there's something about Horizon, man, that I really got into it. And I sunk like well over like 100-150 hours into that game before I moved on to the next one I had lined up. Horizon, right on, love it.
Where I worry about the youth today is like my kids don't really get that interested in video games, and I don't know, sometimes I feel like they're too complex for them, like they don't have starter games. They don't have starter games,
man,
now.
That's why you got to get them into Pokemon, man. It's simple, like fire, water, grass. Yeah. It's like scissors, paper, rock, and then it gets a little more complicated, but get them into Pokemon.
Okay, last question. Number 7. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Being extremely handsome. No. biography, what I want to be remembered for? I would like at the end of my life to have a relatively illustrious, like a relatively illustrious amount of work left behind me, because my first movie was a horror flick called Lead Me Astray that I made while I was in university, and that was a horror movie, and I've made a romantic comedy. I would love to make like a musical. I would love to make like a sci-fi movie. I'd love to write more books. In my teenage years, I was also quite well into, you know, playing guitar. I would love to like make an album at one point. I would love to have behind me like a book, a movie, an album, maybe a game. Like I would like to leave a lot behind me. So it's not so much me being remembered, but just stuff that I make. I would like to find a life, you know, and have really people really enjoy them. And I'm trying my best, you know, to make that happen. I think I am, yeah.
Okay. Well, excellent. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Tom Danger, director, has been on this episode of Black and a Half, and you're buying a home, or you're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein. So Sweet Hurt opens up, or it's available on digital on April 18th. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening to that from at that moment on, I just looked at the date. Will be listening to that. So it's on digital now. Check it out. Yeah, a very funny movie. And it's got a goat. I mean, I think that's a selling point, really. I think I said it has a goat, and I think people should download it. Yeah. If you want to redo your poster, you can just mention shout out to me, okay? Because it's just a goat.
I don't know why I put any of the actors on a poster. Look, the goat is on there. I should have just made it a large picture of the goat. Stupid me.
Thank you so much for coming on. Black and a Half.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.